Yantif, Rabbi Yisai. Mamash Yantif. This is it. This is the end. Shana Rabba. March around seven times. And then we go into Simchas Torah. You have Shmini Atzeres. I have to tell you, Shmini Atzeres is the one day that exists, the Jewish calendar, that we haven't figured out what to do with it. Because really, Shavuos, there's nothing. Right? No sukkah, there's no shofar, there's no matzahs, or nothing. So we came up, you have to eat milchigs and stay up all night. So we came up with something, it should be something. Yeah. Shmini Atzeres, we made it into Simchas Torah. But when you have 2 days, so Shmini Atzeres is just Shmini Atzeres. It's nishtahin, nishtahir, you know. So, Mirtz Hashem, when you all move to Eretz Yisrael, you have only 1 day Yontif. Because you know that 2 days Yontif was something the Chazal created to encourage Aliyah. So, in fact, when I first came here, originally I was only going to come for 3 years, and I went through a 3-day Rosh Hashanah. So I made a quick cheshbon, that means a 3-day Sukkot and a 3-day Shmini Atzeres. I said, look, I have all my family in America. My parents are not well. I have no way of earning a living in Eretz Yisrael. I don't speak Hebrew. I don't have any protexia. This whole country is corrupt. Without any protexia, you can't do anything. this was before the Gulf War. You know, wars, terrorist attacks, crime. Or I could keep another 3-day Yontif. It's not even a question. And I moved here. That was 31 years ago. And I've gone through a lot of difficulties, and I've never looked back and said I made a mistake, because I look at people keeping 2 days Yontif, and you know that in America, when I go to America, we're not allowed to make a Chol HaMoed minyan. And with second day Yontif, we have to go to shul and pretend that we're davening along with you people, and we're not allowed to make our own minyan. Why? Unless it's God to do. You're not allowed to break off the groups. But when Americans come here, they make a second day Yontif, nobody thinks twice about it. They make Hakafis Day, this and that. They don't care. So somebody asked me, what's the difference? I said, because when you go to America and you see Israelis keeping 1 day Yontif, it fills you with rage. But when you come here and we watch you keeping 2 days Yontif, it makes us so happy. we enjoy it so much. So we love watching you keeping 2 days Yontif. Anyway, But we're going in now, Lashon HaRabba night, Mamash, we go in, this is it, Sukkot is coming to an end, seven, all the sevens. 7 days, we're going to march around 7 times, with the 7 Dalad Minim, full non sequitur. But you know, Lulav, 1 Esrig, 3 Hadassim, 2 Aravos, you got 7. You wave it in the 6 directions, you in the middle, you sit in the Sukkah for 7 days, you here surrounded on 6 sides, most years. This year you were surrounded on 5 sides, sometimes 3 sides, depending on how much of it blew down during the windstorm. But, all the sevens, and then you move to Shmini Atzeres, it's above and beyond and out of it. Now, this Shabbos was probably the longest Shabbos davening, except when Rosh Hashanah comes out on Shabbos. Otherwise, and Yom Kippur. Otherwise, this was 12 Prakim of Kehelis. That's a crowd pleaser, yeah? 2 Sifrei Torah, and if you go to one of those shuls where they make a special Mishnah Berurah for you, if they sell the Aliyahs, at that point, just kill people. It's like not even, it's just good. And of course, Full Hallel. I don't know why this is. It's one of these psychological things, but for some reason, Full Hallel takes much longer than Half Hallel. Half Hallel means you just cut half of 2 Kapitlach Tehillim. That's it. You just took off the first half of 2 kapitlach. That's the difference between a chatzi halo and a full halo. But for some reason, the time involved is dramatic. Yeah. So of course, on Sukkot, we have 7 days from Yatzeres, 8 days where we say halo shalim. Yeah. Occasionally, you have bali tefila who really look forward to this opportunity to be able to share their skills with the general public. Just going to take a moment to reflect on that, because you have to remove all bad feelings in your heart going into the holidays. Anyway, but listen, I can't complain. I grew up with a chazan, with an actual chazan. And to this day, when I hear chazanis, I want to eat my own arm. The idea is just too much. In fact, if I have a particular speech I would do for secular audiences, you know, and I would always do my Chazanish imitation. And a guy offered me a job. Yeah, figure. Anyway, life imitates art. But why do we say chatzi challah? Why do we say full challah? We don't say chatzi challah on Pesach. So there's hashgrafic reasons. There's a technical reason. The technical reason is that on Chol HaMoed Pesach, you bring the same korban every day, whereas on Sukkot, as we all know, we bring a different korban. We do 13, 12, 11, 10, 9, 8, 7. And because there's a new korban every day, we have to say a full challah. And that is why the art scroll Sukkot Machzor is 800 pages. Yeah, I wouldn't know this except for the fact that when we do Hoshanas, the guy behind me usually has one. He's much taller. He tends to leave it on my head. It's about 80 pounds, you know. And when a person says, I have a lot on my mind, I know what he means now, yeah. Those suckers are heavy. And you have the transliterated one. I don't even want to know you. Anyway, Encyclopedia Britannica. But anybody even knows what that is anymore. I don't even know what I'm bringing there. Why? Because when I was growing up, you know, so it was more complicated. You know, so you had the little brackets. You know, second day, third day, fourth day, fifth day, sixth day. The art school people don't want you to have to think that much. So they have a separate day for each one. So you shouldn't have to, like, you know, even look at the brackets and try to figure out where you are. Or, like, sit there with the little chart and figure out which Hoshanas we say today. When was Sukkot? Did I make it to shul that day? I don't know. I'll just follow along and see what everyone else says. You know, the only time, Sukkot is the only time you really get the feeling of what it's like to be the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol used to go into the Kosher Kedoshim on Yom Kippur with a pan of hot coals and a spoon with two handfuls of Ketores. He would then put down the hot coals and then he would pour the spoon into his two hands. Do you see the problem over here? You see the problem? You need another hand, yeah? So he used to either hold it in his mouth or in his armpit and pour it over in the Kosher Kedoshim with a rope tied around him in case he did anything wrong and he died, they could pull him out. So, like, no pressure. So here you get to hold your lulav yesrig and your sitter. You know what I'm saying? So I complained about this once, and a guy from Chicago sent me a wristband with the Hoshanas on it. You snap it on, and then you just turn to the right day, and you can just go around. This was a game changer for me. Anyway, so, you can just make it up. You know what I mean? I know. I don't know. How should I know? Anyway, so, but because there's a different korban every single day. And there's a different korban every day. You have 13, 12, 11, 10, 9, 8, 7, because you have to be shivim par, and 13, 12, 11, 10, 9, 8, 7, it goes up to 70. Take my word for it. I don't expect you to do the math. Yeah? So it's up to 70. And you see the problem over here is that we have 7 days, we have to be shivim par, and the only way we could figure that out was 13, 12, 11, 10, 9, 8, 7. Although, if you think about it, there might be an easier way. This is the group participation part of the program. You have 7 days, you have to bring shivim par. What might you have done instead? This is the English-speaking group, I just realized. Bring 10, right? Bring 10 every day, and you bring that for 7 days. That has two advantages. One is you wouldn't need the 800-page machzor, and second of all, you could say chatzi halal. So it's a win-win, you understand? And for some reason, we insist on doing the 13, 12, 11, 10, 9, 8, 7. Why is that? Well, whenever we see the number 70, that should give us an indication. Now, the truth of the matter is that a chumash? No. Keep going. That's the one. Thank you very much. Thank you. For years, I taught in Discovery, and I one time I wanted to quote a pasuk, and they didn't have a copy of the chumash. I said, we spend 2.5 days proving it's true, and we don't even have a copy of it? Anyway. But after that, they made sure not to get one. Anyway, just for me. Hazinu, where we go through the history of the world. So says Pasuk Ches in Hazinu, Bahanche Elyon Goyim, Bahafrida B'nai Adam, Yasev Gulas Amim, Lemispa B'nai Yisrael. We made the 70 nations like the number of the Jews. Says Rashi, Bishvil Mispa B'nai Yisrael, She'asidin Latseis, Me B'nai Shem, Lemispa Shivim Nefesh, Ko B'nai Yisrael, She'yadul Mitzrayim, Heitziv Gulas Amim, Shivim Lashon. Kadosh Baruch Hu made 70 nations because 70 Jews went down to Egypt. Now that sounds a little counterintuitive. I would have thought that 70 Jews went down to Egypt because there were 70 nations and they represent it, but that's not what Rashi says. The 70 nations were because of the 70 Jews who were going down to Egypt. So let's understand what's going on over here. There are three terms that we are familiar with. Nechol, Am, V'loshon. Yeah? So we know there's it's called an Am, that's what's called a Lashon, and this is what's called a Goy. What's the difference between these three terms? A Goy is a racial designation. One of the things that contributed to World War I were the Pan movements. For example, the Pan-Slavic movement, where the Russians were pushing for the fact that all Slavs should feel a connection and they should have their own empire, which, as luck would have it, would be the Russian Empire. And all Slavs should feel an allegiance to the Slavic nation, which is Russia. All Germans should feel a loyalty to Germany, because we're all Germans, and that's the Pan-German movement. And this was the idea. So when Serbia assassinated the Archduke Ferdinand of the Austrian-Hungary Empire, they said, we're going to go and attack Serbia. And Russia said, Serbia are Slavic, and therefore they are under our protection. If you attack them, then we will attack you. Now, Austria-Hungary didn't know if they wanted to take on Russia, so they turned to Germany, since the Austrians are German, for the Pan-Germanic movement, say, come and help us. And so Germany said to Russia, if Austria-Hungary attaches Serbia and you attack Austria-Hungary, then we'll attack you. And France said, well, you know, we have a treaty with Russia, so if you attack Russia, then we're going to have to attack you. And England had a treaty with France and said, well, then we're going to have to go with them. Yeah, and Italy said, who's going to give us the most? And that's how that worked out. Anyway, before you know it, everybody was killing each other. But part of it was because of an identity, a race. I forgot which one. I can't remember all their names, but they're these three lunatics who they call the squad, these three nuts in the Democratic Party. And one of them said, if you're black and you don't vote for a black candidate, then you're a traitor to your race. So the term for that is called racism, that everybody has to vote for the person of their race. But that's the idea, you know. So that's why anybody who supports Trump must be a white nationalist, because they're white and he's white, so you must be a nationalist. You only vote for white people. Of course, if black people don't vote for black people, then they're not really blacks. You know, it's a little strange concept. But that's the idea of Goy. Goy is a racial designation. Am is a political designation. Sir Edward Creasy, and his classic work, The 15 Decisive Battles of World History, in which he maintains that there were 15 battles that created the world as we know it today. And if somebody else had won, it would be a different world. And it's still considered a definitive work, even though it was written in 1850. And everyone agrees these 15 battles changed the course of world history. One of them was Alexander the Great defeating Darius of Persia. And Alexander's army wasn't even as big as Darius's right wing. His army was so tremendous. The difference is that the Persian Empire was made up of so many different types of nations, they didn't know how to work together. Alexander had all Greeks, and so they were all united. They were able to attack in a unified fashion. That's how they were able to win this tremendous victory. When a nation is made up of disparate groups, sometimes they work together and sometimes they don't. Austria-Hungary had the same problem. They were made up of so many different countries and so many different types. They'd never blended into one country. Yeah, America used to be known as the great melting pot, where everybody formed one nation to become Americans. Now, of course, there's the concept of everybody has to go after their particular group and identity politics, and you know, and you cater to each particular group, and we eschew the concept of becoming one people. So this is always the idea of an Am, but an Am is a political reality. The last one is a Lashon, a language. And what's a language? A language is culture. There were in Europe, 16, 17, 1800s, what they called Francophiles. Everyone felt that France was the sea of culture. They were the, when I say sea, I mean Hebrew, you know, the ultimate expression of culture. And everybody wanted to be French, French language, French literature. Yeah, they had a culture. The Gemara in Bracha says that we learn how to eat at a Suda from the Persians. The Persians understood the correct way to eat better than any other people, and so we wanted to take that from them. That was part of their culture, what made them up. And every language reveals a certain understanding of that culture. So, for example, in Hebrew, a key is a mafteach, from the word patach, something that opens. In Yiddish, it's a schlüssel, something that closes. Now, the truth is that a key does both things, but what you call it reflects a little bit on the way you look at it. And that's why there are certain languages where there are certain words that exist that you can't find anyplace else. Yeah? German is considered the best language to express philosophy. Words like Weltanschauung and things like this, you don't have them in other languages. And so they use the German terms. Those are the best terms. There are certain emotional terms and ideas like that that exist in French that don't exist in any other language. I asked somebody once about English, and you know, a linguist, and he says it became the language of commerce. It's the best language to be able to express commerce. But there are certain words you have in every language you just cannot translate. Yeah, obnoxious. Right, Americans have the word obnoxious. Mm-hmm. Surprisingly, there's no such a word in Hebrew, but it's not there. Yeah,
Israeli.
Yeah.
Israeli.
You want to say that the word itself? Yeah, no, I would never say something like that. I've been living here. Ani mamash Yisraeli achshav. Certain words, Inui, which is a language of what they used to call Eskimos, that's not politically correct anymore, the Inui. There are 30 different words for snow. So that tells you something about these people, right? They know a lot about snow, right? The hard snow, dry snow, wet snow, blowing snow, you know, different words describe snow. A quick perusal, and I did this for my own research, of the Ranzoni aisle reveal that in Italian there are over 70 words for pasta, noodles, you understand? So you have spaghetti and linguine and fettuccine and rigatoni and, you know, and lasagna. Every time they give the noodle a kvetch, they make up another word for it. So that tells you that noodles are more than just a food source to these people. It's something deep in their cultural reality about their food. So something about pasta is just, you know. Lashon HaKodesh, as you know, we have words like Lahodos, Lahalel, Lashabech, Lafe'elu, Ramem, Lahadel, Evereichel, Lelo, Kales. And if you look in the Yard School, you'll see it says to praise, to lord, to exalt, to extol, to glorify, to raise high, to make very exalted and most extolled. Yeah, they just went to the thesaurus and copied out a list of words because there aren't words in English to describe that. But if you want to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the difference between L'shabech, L'fa'er is dramatic. Yeah, there's Svarim written about the difference between Lahodos, Lahalel. So, it's something that in this language it expresses it in a very deep way. But every language has something to offer, which means every culture has something to offer that we can incorporate. Shavuos is the holiday of the Yom HaZalim. When the Gemara in Avodah Zarah wants to describe what's going to happen, Lasad Lavai, Kodesh Baruch Hu says, they say to Kodesh Baruch Hu, give us a mitzvah. So he gives a mitzvah sukkah. So the Mepharshim say, because Mashiach is going to come in sukkah, so that's be the mitzvah, you know. Go build a sukkah. Yeah. There's something about sukkahs, Adi Yom HaZeh. There's a tremendous amount of Christians who come to Yerushalayim for sukkahs, you know, in the holiday of tabernacles. They sense that this is a yontif for the Yom HaZeh. Now, Pesach and Shavuos are uniquely Jewish. Uniquely Jewish. Yeah. Pesach, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Egypt, and then Shavuos, he gave us the Torah. Yeah, that's uniquely Jewish. When I was in high school, I was an FBT, Flaming Baal Tshuva. I got from a 12, and you know, and I had that fire of youth that's really hard to maintain, I hate to say. I used to have these guys go off to Eretz Yisrael, and they would like from out, and the father would get really nervous, and I said, relax, he's just going through a phase. He'll eventually give it up and become like you and not care about anything. Don't worry. And more often than not, the parent would say, oh, good. You know? Somebody said to me, aren't you afraid your kids will from out and not eat in your house? I said, I look forward to it. I can't afford to feed them. Anyway, so, so I was really, you know, dressed in dark somber suits. I used to call everybody my child. I was in 10th grade. Anyway, so I go to a chasana, and this woman comes over to me, a married woman. She says, oh, I understand you're going to become a rabbi. I said, yes, my child. So he says, she says, what do you think about intermarriage? I say, intermarriage is a terrible thing, devastating the Jewish people. You know, it's a traitor to our cause. He goes, oh, because my husband married a shiksa. I said, that's terrible. And for the last time in my life, I was speechless. I remember this. I was just like, I don't know what to say. And so she took advantage to point out, she says, well, you know, Christians, Jews, we all have the Ten Commandments. Now, there's an expression, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. I've gotten caught over the years, but if you catch me, it's my job now to go back and figure out what to do the next time. So, sure enough, it's happened to me. People say to me, you know, well, we all have the Ten Commandments. And I say, really? Mine starts, I'm the Lord your God that took you out of the land of Egypt. How does yours start? The Christians have two versions. They either take the second dibber and turn it into two, don't have any of the garbs, don't make any graven images, or they take the last one and turn it into two. Don't covet your neighbor's wife. I guess that needs a special one. Yeah, and that's why they come up with 10. But Anoichi Hashem Elokecha, that's uniquely Jewish. And that's why Shavuos and Pesach, these are our holidays. But when we come on Sukkot, we bring Shivim Par Keneged the Shivim Umas HaOlam. We bring a kapara for the nations of the world. This is the universal holiday of the Jewish people wherein we express our concern for the entire world. Chazal say if the Goyim had any idea what they lost when they destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, they would rush to rebuild it. It was for them the Shefa came. And the Beis HaMikdash had this tremendous power on the Jewish, on the nations of the world. You're going to lay in Zos HaBracha. 2 days. And you're going to learn about the arrangement to Nisach HaZvul, which is in Zos HaBracha. Happy is Zvulun when he goes out, and Yisachar as he sits in his tent. And Rashi tells us, Zvulun Yisachar asu shutfis. Zvulun lechof yam and yishkain, he lived by the sea. V'yotze leprakmatia besfinais, umistaker, v'nozen letoich piv, sho Yisachar, v'em yoshmeresken betoyer. Why did Yisach and Zvulun work out with this deal? You don't see God and Asher did this. You didn't see Dan and Naphtali. See Reuven and Shimon. Why did these two Shvatim do it? And furthermore, you don't find any allusion to this in Vayechi when Yaakov gives him the bracha. But the bracha he gives Zvulun is you're going to live b'chof hayam, and b'meili you're going to do prakmatia. And as Rashi says, you're going to go out. You're going to travel around the world in boats. We were a maritime power at one time. And because of this, the people are going to come to you also to do business. And while they're here, they say, yeah, I might as well go to Yerushalayim. They see the Beis HaMikdash, and they all convert. So Zvulun was out doing Kirov. He was out doing business. He was this is the bracha that he got. So when he gets to Sefer Devarim, and he reads Lo me'eva yom, not those who go business overseas, they're not the ones who are going to become Tamdei Chachamim. Zvulun says, this bracha is for me, a double-edged sword. Gives me an opportunity to be able to go out and reach into the Umas HaOlam and bring them to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it's going to cut down on my opportunity to learn Torah. That's why he's the one who made this arrangement with Yisachar. Because he wanted to, he understood that if I do my Tafkin. But that was the power of the Beis HaMikdash. Goyim would come and it was a life-changing event. We know there are people who come to Eretz Yisrael and they go to the Kaisel, which according to many Mefarshim, is the outside supporting wall of the Har HaBayis. It's not part of the Heichal, it's on the outside. And they come there. Certainly we're not seeing the grandeur, because if you go into the little tunnels there, you'll see that there's as much of the Kaisel underground as there is above ground, which means in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the street level, you looked up, the Kaisel was twice as high as it is now. That's why Wilson's Arch, when you go in to the little cave over there and you see that big arch, it's coming out of the Kaisel itself, they believe that was a bridge, took you from the upper city, because now when you walk from the upper city down to the Kaisel, that's a walk. It was twice as far down. So they made a bridge to take you across to the Har HaBayis. It was an unbelievable thing. Beis HaMikdash was twice as high as that gold dome that's temporarily there. A cloud hovering above it, fire coming down from Shemayim. You'd walk in and see them take off the Trumas HaDeshen and get absorbed into the floor. The Kohanim, on Erev Pesach, two rows, one with gold kalim and one with silver kalim, they were passing them back and forth so fast to throw on the Mizbeach, it's a blur. It's a solid line of gold and silver. The blood came up to their ankles, but they couldn't walk in the blood, so they were little pegs that they had to jump around on. Yeshech the Behema, the blood shoots out of the neck at about 60 miles an hour. You have to catch it. And then put it in the bowl, and then carry it up to the Mizbeach, throw it and bring it back. And they're doing this so fast. And if you get a drop of blood on you, you're out. You got to leave and change your clothes. Could you imagine what that looked like? I can't. I can't even begin to imagine. So imagine you're a guy. Come to the Beis HaMikdash. The awe. Yerushalayim is called an ear. Ears from Lashon Ar, to wake up. La'orer. This was a life-changing experience to come to Yerushalayim, to come to the Beis HaMikdash, to be able to see it. It was like, wow. I understand all this, those kinus that we say after the Avodah and Yom Kippur. If we had this, we could see what this was. What an unbelievable thing. No woman in Yerushalayim ever wore a perfume because of the Keteris. It so filled the city with such smell. Mishnah Talmud says it went all the way down to Yericho. They were able to smell the Keteris. We can even imagine what these things were like. You know, it's like, wow. And so the Umas HaOlam, the Beis HaMikdash was not just for us, it was for the whole world. And the Umas HaOlam have what to offer us. That's what the Gemara Bracha says. That's why there are certain words that you find, you know, in Greek that was used in the Beis HaMikdash. That's why the Rambam was mityaches to Aristotle and Shmuel Hirsch to secular humanism. They understood that there were things in there. When a Yid learned science, I mean, you don't understand this. The Big Bang was such a slug up for the science. Yeah, when Einstein discovered that the universe was expanding, he hid it. He refused to publish it. He put in a you know, something in these equations so you wouldn't realize it, because it slugs up all of science. Yeah, as I once heard Dr. Gerald Schroeder say, science has finally been mechaven to the first three words in the Bible, in the beginning. Because they all wanted to follow what Aristotle said, the universe is eternal, it always was, as it will be. And you don't have to ask where it came from. If I ask you, where does God come from? You say he always existed, the universe always existed. Comes along the Big Bang and says, no, at some point it began. What a slug up. So now they have to find ways to work around that. But that in of itself, unbelievable. Unbelievable. How does something come from nothing? No conservation of matter and energy. There's no explanation for this. Dr. Schroeder said he once posted this on on message boards that the major cosmologists go on, and he says, where did the matter come from for the Big Bang? And they wrote, if you could answer that question, we'll get you a Nobel Prize. Yeah. So the Ummah Sa'ulam, if you look around what they have, it's unbelievable. Supports what we're saying over and over again, everything, you know. And if they have something worthwhile, it's no problem. You take it from them. That's good. Shivan Panam Lataya, Shivan Umais. And so the 70 Jews who went down, there are 70 nations because each one is an amvaloshon, and each one has a contribution to make that we could take from them. But we don't do it 10 every day. We do 13, 12, 11, 10, 9, 8, 7 because pachais v'halich. Yes, the Ummas Olam have what to offer us, but the effect is going down. Anyone else know where that Lashon Pachos V'Holich pops up? Gemara and Shabbos.
Beishamai.
What?
Beishamai.
Beishamai and Chanukah. How do you like the menorah? Beishamai says, Pachos V'Holich. 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 from the Parei HaChag. Says Beis Hillel, you do 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 7, 8. Malim v'kodesh v'maridim. If I was Beis Hillel, I would have said 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 because what in the world do the Korbanos and Sukkahs have to do with Hanukkah? But that's not what he says. He says, I hear what you're saying. Afal pikein, malim v'kodesh v'maridim. But your svar makes sense, Beis Hillel. Where's the relationship? 15th of Tishrei to the 15th of Cheshvan, 30 days. 15th of Cheshvan to the 15th of Kislev, another 30 days, 60 days. 15th of Kislev to the 25th of Kislev, another 10 days, 70 days. 70 days from Sukkot to Hanukkah. And what's Hanukkah? The Greeks attacked the Beis HaMikdash. They didn't destroy it. The Babylonians destroyed it. The Romans destroyed it. They usurped it. They said, Beis HaMikdash is great. We're going to take it for ourselves. Gemara in Baba Basra says that Hordas, Herod the Great, yeah, he usurped the throne. He was a slave of the Chashmonaim. He killed all the Chashmonaim except one woman named Miriam. Josephus calls her Mariamna. And he was going to marry her. And she went up on top of a roof and she said, I'm the last of the Beis Chashmonaim. And anyone who says he's from the Chashmonaim, from here on in, it's really an Eved. And she threw herself to her death. And Hordas was not put off by that. He was going to marry her anyway. He preserved her in honey. And he would bring her out on state occasions. And to this day, husbands call their wives honey. If you're wondering where that came from. Anyway, so Hordas decides to kill all the Chachamim. He takes Bava and Buta. He blinds him. And then he goes to him and tries to get him to curse the king. And he tells him, no, you can't curse the king. He says, but he's not a real king. He still can't curse. No one will know, can't curse him. So he realizes he did a terrible avla. So he says, what do I do? He says, you put out the light of Klal Yisrael, the Chachamim, rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, which is called the light. The Greeks wanted to take that light. The Ha'aretz HaYisrael, so v'vohu v'choshech, choshech is Yavan. They wanted to be the darkness to our light. And on Hanukkah, we took it back and relit the light. Mishnah and Sukkah says that they would light on Sukkot at the Simchas Beis HaShoeva these giant lights, and every chatzar in Yerushalayim was lit up. The Medrash says on Hanukkah, when they lit the menorah, every chatzar in Yerushalayim was lit up. On Sukkot, Pachos V'Holech, do the nations of the world have what to offer us? Yes. But we are, take the good, and it's on our terms. Aser B'Teves is really a combination of three different tragedies. On the 8th, Talmi HaMelech forced us to translate the Torah into Greek. Terrible thing we had to translate the Torah into Greek. Remember the end of Kisavo, it says we put up these 12 giant rocks and we wrote the Torah Be'er Heitev in 70 languages. Mustamba, one of them was Greek. Right? So we already wrote the Torah in Greek. So what was the tragedy? The difference is it was an Eretz Yisrael under our control. Now the Goyim had control. They can take the Torah, make Bible critics, put it on the shelf of world classics, do whatever they want with it. When it was by us in Eretz Yisrael, we had control. On Sukkot, Ummas HaOlam will come on our terms. You go into Golus. Gemara Bracha says the only reason we do anything bad is because the Sar Sheba Issa and the Shibut Golius. Because now the Goyim have whatever they have to offer in our terms. One of the worst ads I ever saw. Every time I think of it, it makes my skin crawl. Baron Herzog. It's not the best kosher wine. It's the best wine. So I don't want the best kosher wine. I want the best wine. When I was growing up, there was only one kosher wine. It was extra heavy Malaga. Came in a gallon jug. You had to take a spoon and put it into your cup. Took a sip. You got a headache. Lasted you weeks. So eventually, Carmel started coming out with wines that at least were liquid. You know what I mean? And this is like a major move forward, you know? But now I don't want that. I want the best. I want the best wine. I want the best scotch. I want the best of everything. My father-in-law was davening in a shtiebel, and the population was aging, and then they died, and they had to bring in young people. They bring in young people, so he says to me, these young people come to the Kiddush, and they bring these bottles of scotch, and they go home drunk. Jews don't drink, says to me. Jews don't drink. When I was growing up, nobody drank. Nobody drank. The old men at the Kiddush, you know, with the hair growing out of their ears and a herring on a kichel, you know what I mean? It said, Hevel l'chaim, Hevel l'chaim. It burnt, it stunk, it was disgusting. Why would anybody drink this garbage, you know what I mean? You know, but you did Hevel l'chaim, and I was okay. My father-in-law used to give out a l'chaim after the fish. I couldn't get it down. To this day, I can't. I reach a certain age where I can't keep saying I'm too young, so I pretend to drink. I get a l'chaim and I take a little sip, and it's disgusting. Scotch comes in three flavors: disgusting, unbelievably disgusting, and undrinkable. Yeah, Lafarge falls under the third category, but you know. But it's the person who did the convention for the OU. He says. The guy told me afterwards it was the best behaved convention he ever had. He says, but we make our money at the bar. He says, I never saw a convention where nobody drinks. Jews don't drink. That used to be a given thing, you know? I says, at the end, you know, the you know, people going home, every guy says, you want to drink? Want a drink? How about him? Want a drink? Every Jew says, did you eat yet? Did you eat? I ate. I didn't have coffee. I got your coffee. I got a piece of cake, you know? Jews eat. That's what we do. We don't drink, yeah? So when I got married, my father brought me a bottle of Chivas and a bottle of Crown Royal. He says, it'll last you the rest of your life. Okay. I moved there. So all these three yeshiva guys came for Shabbos, and they brought a bottle of Shivas. Now, that's not a 10-shekel bunch of flowers. You know what I mean? That's a lifetime supply. And when they left, it was empty, and I didn't have any. So I said, the times, they are a-changing. Yeah? And then they come out, and I say, you want a l'chaim after the fish? He says, yeah, you have any single malt? I said, is that Shivas or Crown Royal? Oh, it's Glenn Livet, Glenn Roth, Glenn Moragi, Glenn Smith, Glenn Miller, Glenn John Glenn. You know. So, okay, so I started buying these things, and I'd see these people, they would get drunk of a sort. My kid got married, my daughter got married, so the other side said, you know, you're going to provide alcohol for the boys. I said, why? I have a bottle for my friends, one of the chaimers. I said, for the boys? He says, well, the fathers like to give, put out booze for the boys because otherwise they don't drink. I said, if my future son-in-law doesn't have anybody who wants to celebrate that he's getting married unless they're drunk, tell them not to come. So they brought their own bottles. But my son says to me, Abba, you don't get it. And I don't. So my father-in-law says to me, I don't understand. You know, they go home drunk. Jews don't drink. I said, must be they're not Jewish. He says, you can't say that. I said, what do I mean? He said, they're going. The guy who keep Torah mitzvahs. It was a yeshiva. Mashgiach, he says to me, this guy comes over to me and says, what do you guys want from me? That's the Hanala. What do you guys want from me? He says, I just want to go into my father's business, make a lot of money, marry a beautiful girl, buy her jewelry, live in a big house, drink the finest wine, the finest scotch, go out to eat, go on vacation. What's wrong with that? He says, what do I tell him? Say nothing. It's the perfect life if you're a guy. He says, no, he'll daven three times a day, and he's going to learn Daf Yomi. I said, see, you're good. You learn Daf Yomi. This guy had a chavrusa for Daf Yomi. They were learning like 4 years. He gives him an invitation. He said, what's this? It's my son's bar mitzvah. He says, oh, mazel tov. So I want you to come. He says, I'd be honored. So I want to give you an aliyah. He says, oh, yeah, I can't. He says, why? I'm a guy. He says, you're a guy? He says, yeah. But you learn Daf Yomi. He says, ah, intellectual exercise. But you keep Shabbos, you come to shul every week. Oh, I think it's a beautiful day for the holiday for the family, you know, and I like the davening. And he says, but we learned the Gemara in Sanhedrin, a guy is not allowed to keep Shabbos. He goes, before I go to shul, I put a handkerchief in my pocket. He says, but we have an Erev. He says, you hold from that Erev? So you're good, you're going to learn stuff. But how do you look at life? I want what the goyim have, and I'll do it kosher. Because I don't want the best kosher wine, I want the best wine. And Shavuos is pochos v'holeich. And then we spend 70 days removing all of it until we come to Hanukkah when it's just light, just pure light. The light of Torah, the light of the Beis HaMikdash, the light of the Kedusha. And the Yom HaSolem have what to offer us? Yes, but on our terms, not on their terms. We'll take it in, we'll make it part of us, but not on their terms. If you've ever had a chasana in your family, then you know that the chasana is very fancy. Everybody gets all dressed up, and they go, and everyone's smiling, and you have waiters serving the food, and it's all in dishes. Okay. And then the family goes home. Yeah? Everybody takes off their suits, they put on their robes, you know, and they sit around. They get whatever leftovers the caterer gave them, and they're all sitting around eating the leftovers from the same thing, you know, they're eating together, and they're all talking about the chasana. That's so beautiful and so poignant. The other one was much fancier, much better, but it didn't have that beauty and poignancy. Kodesh Baruch Hu says 7 days of Sukkot, terrific. Celebrate with all the Yom HaSolem. One day Shmini Atzeres is just me and you. Just me and you. Says of Desla, tomorrow morning we march around 7 times. Where do we ever see that? By Yericho. You march around 7 times and the walls fall down. Because for 7 days we let the Umas HaOlam come in and give us whatever they had. We were mechapa for them. And now we break down all of the tumma. 7 is always 70, the same thing, it's the same number. That's where the Shivim Amnim is just condense the Shivim Umas HaOlam. So we march around 7 times, they all fall down. And then on Simchas Torah, we march around 7 more times with the Torah and we build ourselves new walls. We build ourselves a new life. Rabbi Yisai, more than anything, the Yetzer Hara wants you to believe that you're just not that important. Because otherwise you'll bring Mashiach. But when you think about Klal Yisrael today, how many people are learning in Yeshiva and Eretz Yisrael? You are a part of the top percentile of Klal Yisrael. Your tefillahs are so valuable. What you can do is so unbelievable. Rembrandt and the school of Dutch masters used to paint Jews, and they said, because when you saw a Jew, you saw malchus, you saw dignity, you saw a different type of a human being. Today we have mitzvah observant goyim. On Sukkot, we take the best that the world has to offer, and we break down all those worlds of tumah, and we rebuild it as Torah. And we build ourselves into Yidden. There's a Noahide movement in the world. These are goyim who aren't ready to become Jews, but they understand Christianity is not true. And so they became B'nai Noah. And one of them was talking at a convention, this former minister, fiery southern minister. He was a minister of a church in rural Tennessee, and he realized Christianity wasn't true. He knew he couldn't get everyone to convert, so he said, we're becoming Noahides. Now all the Yoshka stuff. You know, take that Yoshka out of here. And he came to speak and he says, you are the chosen people. You are supposed to be the light unto the Lord. You are supposed to be inspiring us. Are you living up to your responsibility? Everyone's like, oh, vey. The Mashgiach yells at us. Okay, we know how to tune that out already, but this guy is screaming at us. You're a Yid. You're responsible for the world. The greatness and the power that you have. Tomorrow morning, it's time for us to knock down the evil, and then the next day, it's time for us to rebuild the good. And then we can go into, Mirtzah Hashem, a winter's man of Torah, where it's just us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we dance around. For 7 days, we dance around, march around with the Torah in the middle. And on Simchas Torah, we take the Torah with us and bring it back with us for the long winter's man until Mirtzah Hashem. Pesach comes, Zman HaGeulah, And Emirat Hashem, through the schus of your Torah and your tefillah, and through our power as Klal Yisrael to change the world, we Emirat Hashem be zeicha to see you in Emes Ha'Geula. Yontif.